With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. It's July, it's late July, and the weather has matched in Manchester, England. It's June, it's late June, and it feels like July. It's really hot. I just came back from Spain, and when I got home, my house was hotter than Spain. It's ridiculous. So, welcome to the podcast. Today, we're talking about The Handmaid's Tale. And joining us is a handmaid herself. It's Mel from America. Hi, Mel.
What are you implying, Howell?
I don't think before I speak. And there's Jamie, as usual, coming from a warm but bad for internet Croston. No, not Croston, Eccleston.
Eccleston.
Which you can Google Maps and see the place where Jamie
it's
lives
great.
Now.
It's great for ducks, it's bad for internet.
There you go.
That's on the sign for the town, right?
It's yeah,
absolutely.
He's got a sign. Jesus. My window is open because it's so hot. Mel has got a fan on. Jamie's internet's bad. All in all, you're in for an audio experience like no other. And Matt Wandless is joining us. I didn't think he was going to be able to make it this week. And he's just messaged to say he's ready when we are and he can join us. How exciting. We're going to be talking about...
Imagine the stank in Matt's house tonight with the heat.
And all of the people who live in his basement.
And all the basement people. That's some awful basement people stank.
And the rotting London veg outside his window, as well as the open sewer that we all know exists. Oh, he's here. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Just describing the smell of your house today.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, guys.
Okay. We imagine there's quite a stank in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Corpses, rotting flesh.
That's right.
My own sweaty body, you know.
Yeah.
So Matt is from Dickensian London. We're from the north. Mel is from Kansas. We're all characters in our own box set. And tonight we're going to be talking about a box set that is set in the future, but also harks to the past quite a lot. But we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, a couple of emails to deal with. First of all, Ray, thank you for your email on Vikings. Great podcast about frequency last week, he says. It left me neutral about the show. Thank you, Ray. That's what we hope, that in a 45-minute podcast we can push you towards neutrality. I'm just finishing off a 4-series binge of Vikings and noticed that you haven't reviewed it, or have you? No, we haven't. We never have, and it has been suggested a couple of times over the years, and we've never got round to it. Has anybody here watched any Vikings?
No.
No.
No. No.
You can hear
I've interviewed one of the women, though. Catherine Winnick.
Well, do you get the sense that this is a good show from that interview, Mel?
She was a great interview. I had someone else send me the questions for it because, of course, I didn't know what I was talking about. But it sounds like she plays a very strong character, and I know a lot of people who are huge fans. So.
Well, look, Ray, we're being distinctly non-committal about this, partly because we're trying...
Neutral, you might say.
We're neutral. We're trying very hard to be on the zeitgeist a little more on this podcast, to review things that are out currently, and Vikings just seems to get further and further away into the past, but maybe we will find a hole for it, and it's
still
nothing
on the air, Howell.
Yeah, but we've got to go back so far, don't we? It's like,
and we've done Deadwood and The West Wing on this.
That's right. But of late, Jamie and I have said we really need to start talking about stuff that's actually being released. But who knows? Maybe we will. We'll put it to a poll and see if anyone's willing to actually watch it. Ray, let us know where we can watch it now, will you? That would help.
It's on Amazon, isn't it?
Amazon, yeah.
It's on Hulu as well.
I've de-signed from Amazon.
You guys don't have Hulu.
Don't
never mind.
Have Hulu.
How can you have de-signed from Amazon to do the show? Honestly.
Well, I can't really. I've watched Billy Bob Thornton's piece. I've watched John Goodman's, what's it called?
Alpha House.
Alpha House, which is brilliant.
But you still haven't watched Transparent, and you haven't watched I Love Dick.
No.
I Love Dick's brilliant.
Good, insert joke. Kyle Nolan has emailed as well, who we spoke about last week. Kyle, who runs noreruns.net. Very nice chap. Absolutely loved the first season of Wayward Pines, he says. It was one of my top shows of the year it aired. Now, he has summed up what I didn't know, but I was trying to get at about Series 1. It's definitely a show you need to hang on with until the huge reveal in Episode 5 or 6. They really didn't need a second season and probably shouldn't have bothered. The first provides a perfect season of TV, both raising some questions and answering them. I enjoyed the first season so much that I even listened to the audiobooks afterwards. They burned through all three books of the source material in the first season. First book covered about half of the first season, while each of the other two were covered by two or three episodes each. So going into the second season, there was no source material, and the folks who wrote, created the book series were no longer involved. They were the ones who really championed the show, and you could feel their excitement and passion in interviews. And so this was lost in the second series. And as a result, it was nowhere near as good as the original, which makes total sense.
How long is this letter?
That's it, it's finished. And you're right, it was a letter, Matthew. You see, Matt lives in Dickensian London. He believes that was written in quill. And sent
delivered
to
by a boy.
Yeah, that's
delivered
correct.
By his boy.
Yeah, or pigeon. It was delivered by pigeon. You know, I'm actually reading, Blake Crouch wrote the Wayward Pines series, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I'm reading Dark Matter, his newest novel.
Oh, right.
I just started it yesterday, and it's really... I don't think I'm where like episode 5 would be yet on a TV show. So I'm not quite sure what's going on. I think I know what's going on, but it's really different. And it actually got me thinking, maybe I do need to watch Wayward Pines. And then I was listening to the podcast and I was like, oh, well, if season 2 is crap, maybe I don't need to listen.
Well, I think like he just summed up, though, if you just imagine that they're different things, it's like you can watch the books in season 1 and it's very strong, I think. Have you continued with it anymore, Matt?
I haven't had time, sorry, but I will watch a couple more episodes at least.
And I've just read a book whilst in Spain, and it is called Everyone Brave is Forgiven. And I think that this is going to be made into either a film, but I hope a box set. I have no evidence of that. I'm just reading it, and I'm going, this guy's like a multi-bestseller writer. Somebody has to have bought the rights to this. So I just want to put it down into the ether now that I predict something called Everyone Brave is Forgiven, which is set in the Second World War, and it's brilliant. If you want to read a great book, get it. Time for The Handmaid's Tale.
Can I ask a question before we start at that nice little edit point?
Question, Matthew.
Do I sound weird this week because I'm outside?
No, you sound great. And we're all, fine, we have windows open and fans on and ducks quacking. It's very much a summer podcast.
No, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't making loads of noise or wind blowy sounds.
No more.
There's a lovely breeze.
You got your new mic on, Matt?
No, I've gone back to the old one. Now, fuck you. Let's carry on.
What sounded better?
Handmaid's Tale was a book that you may well have studied at GCSE. I didn't. Can somebody please set up The Handmaid's Tale in a natty way? Mel, have you got Wikipedia open in front of you?
No.
Oh, what a surprise.
Because you guys make fun of me all the time, so I didn't open it. Okay. I have read the book, though. It's been a couple of years. It was really disturbing.
This book was studied at GCSE.
I'm pretty sure.
Bloody hell, really?
I'm pretty sure it's a set text.
This has got to be A-level or higher, I would have thought.
I could confirm that it's not on the set text in the United Kingdom at the moment, Howell.
How can you confirm that?
Because I work in education these days, and I can confirm it's not on the set text.
Could it be A-level?
Slam.
Could be A-level, though. Could be A-level.
There you go. I'm pretty sure it's...
I mean, it would make more sense because it's freaking brutal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's a cliff notes of it, and so I'm just doing a quick Google, but anyway. All right. Does anyone want to set this up, or shall I? I've got the Wikipedia. Let me do the Wikipedia.
Go for it.
The Handmaid's Tale is a 1985... dystopian novel by Canadian author Margaret Atwood, set in near-future New England in a totalitarian theocracy that has overthrown the United States government. The novel explores themes of women in subjugation and various means by which they gain individualism and independence. So, it's the future. The government have taken over with all sorts of clever methods, or somebody's taken over as government through all sorts of methods, and women are very much treated as baby-making machines. There's a class system that's kind of brought in heavily, and you cannot escape. In fact, be careful what you say anyway, because if you say anything against the new religion, you could be carted away and punished, killed, tortured in horrible ways. And that is the bleak world that we enter in The Handmaid's Tale. In Britain, it's been released week by week, so the maximum that we can really have watched is about 4 or 5 episodes. I am pretty much up to date, but you in America have had the whole thing, is that right?
Yes, it was released week to week, but the season one finale was released last week, so we're done for this season.
Have you watched the finale?
Yes.
Ooh. And is it HBO or it's Hulu made?
It's Hulu. Okay. It's Hulu, yeah.
Cool, cool. And of course, everything comes back to the West Wing, and Zoe herself... what's her actual name? Elizabeth Moss.
God, I totally forgot she was Zoe Bartlett. I think of her so much now as Peggy from Mad Men. I totally forgot of her as Zoe Bartlett.
And of course, everything comes back to Chuck as well. And Yvonne Strahovski plays Serena Joy in it, who is the kind of if Elizabeth is the handmaid in a house, Yvonne Strahovski is the woman of the house. Her husband played
the
by
the mistress of the house.
Max. No, Joseph.
She's probably finding it very strange because no one's asked her to take her clothes off yet. Do a quick change in the back of a van or anything like that.
We're hoping it'll happen, but I don't think this
zero bikini.
You're joking, but that's actually one of the... It's not explored in enough detail in season one. I hope they go more into it in season two, but the position of the wife who cannot bear children is very interesting.
Ah,
really?
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
I think she's superb in it. I think she plays such a kind of
She is. Yeah.
Mix.
Everyone's great in it.
She's brilliant.
So you guys are on episode 4 or 5.
Hang on. And also, everything comes back to the Gilmore Girls. Alexis Bledel from the Gilmore Girls is also in it, and she is brilliant. She is her friend, you know, her friend who she goes for walks with.
Off Glen, yeah, yeah.
So we don't want to give away anything after episode one, but it's her friend who she goes for walks with. So it really is a stellar cast, and any of my sort of snippy criticisms of Monterey's The Big Little Lies doesn't stand with this. This is a cast that I just think is, I think it's so rich, and what they're playing is so deep and complex, and I think it's great. I think I love it, but at the same time I'm really struggling with the mood of this piece. How's everyone else finding it? Let's come to you last, Mel, if you don't mind, because you've got we're kind of the guinea pigs in this situation. Jamie, how are you finding it?
Well, the first episode I watched, I found deeply, it was just like a depress a fest.
Yeah,
it was just everything. This was a very, very sort of dark, heavy topic with just miserable people dressed miserably, living in a miserable existence. Mm-hmm. A great cast of people doing it, but I did come away from episode one going, if I'm going to watch this, I'm not going to be able to watch it very... I'm going to have to watch it on a week-by-week basis because I can't... This is something you can't watch day in, day out. It's
Does
just
it remind you too much of Eccleston?
It there's a lot of similarities in the especially in the duck community. There's a thriving duck community here, and the way they treat the women is similarly is disrespectful. Second episode though, just like it triggered something. There's something about that. The second episode is the episode where one of the handmaids is giving birth. And that is one of the most, like, it's a brilliantly, fascinatingly terrifying episode in which you've got the wives faking this like delivery, this labor scene in one room, and then upstairs you've got the real birth happening. And that for me was the moment where I went, okay, I'm actually really interested in this idea and this concept. And actually, there seems to be a little bit of wit and a little bit of like edge to it that makes it more than just a depressing dystopia that we're staring into the abyss every week into. It seems to have a little bit more of an edge. So second episode in, which I'm up to now, two episodes, I'm definitely more intrigued by the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bingey show, though, is it?
No.
It's really hard work.
I know what you mean, yeah.
I find it sad on many levels, but I want it to be a prison break more. You know, Wikipedia forgot to mention in the setup was really that Zoe's character, Zoe from the West Wing's character,
Elizabeth Moss, her name is Elizabeth Moss.
Character, really the primary setup is she has tried to escape and has been caught and brought back and been split from her husband and child. So that's a big setup. Anyway, I get the feeling very much that she ain't going to escape anytime soon. And once I'm resigned to that, I'm just watching some very, very sad things happen. And then they bring in a piece of music like Frankie Goes to Hollywood or whatever it was they brought in at the end of one episode. And you start to go, oh, this is so darkly comic that I couldn't tell at first. But it is knowingly taking the piss out of this kind of out of any extreme religion in a way as well, isn't it? There's a deep sense of humour in there as well, but I'm taking it that if I'm expecting Prison Break, I ain't going to get it anytime soon, Mel.
Are we doing spoilers or no?
Okay, well let's not. But I'm starting to feel like
no, I don't want to know spoilers.
No,
okay.
But I'm starting to feel like it's picking up. We're beginning to pick up the idea that she might be able to, you know, try and get out again. But it's very few and far between those moments. I kind of want more of those moments. Did you watch it all at once, Mel? Did you binge it?
No. I 100% agree with the other you three that this is not a binge show, just for the sake of your own sanity.
So how do you feel at the end of it? Like, what is the reason to trudge through this? And
I was thinking about this when I was watching the finale. The last 8 minutes or so is you alternate between hopefulness and despair to the point that you're despairingly hopeful.
Okay.
It leaves you thinking there's hope, but it's going to be we're still not at the darkest point, or we're getting to the darkest point before the dawn, I suppose, to be cliche about it.
Okay.
Definitely got. I was going to ask, is it set it up for a second series? Then is that just set up for second series, right?
Yes, and it needs one. There's so much story left to tell.
Have you read the book, Mel?
I have, and this is, it's sticking with the timeline, but making it richer. Or it's sticking with the storyline, but making it richer. Because the pace is so slow.
Yeah.
Well, that's my problem, really, and it goes back to the way we're Pine's discussion before of like, studios, it is against their interest to end something after a series. They just don't want to do it. And I think we suffer from that sometimes. So with Big Little Lies, you know, I hated the end because of the need to set up another series. With Wayward, didn't need beyond the books. And when you read a novel, you put in so much effort. You put in the kind of effort that this series is requiring of us. But the studios need to continue. It works against that. And I wonder if it tries our patience too much, this series. It, albeit amazing.
I don't think so. I think that the very idea of a TV show or any visual retelling of a book adding richness to it is so great and interesting, because normally with an adaptation you lose
the
that
opposite, it, right.
Exactly, yeah,
people say that, yeah, yeah.
And this idea that we can it's kind of what we were talking about with The Walking Dead a few weeks ago, Hal, where you get the opportunity to really investigate something, and show it in all its terrifying, grotesque details. I think it's fantastic for that. And yeah. I mean, for me, this is probably in terms of the contemporary stuff we've done, the best thing I think we've talked about on the show. I think it's an incredible exploration of an idea.
Mm. Yeah, I get what you mean, Matt, because I like the pace. In some respects, at the start, I wasn't sure, but the more you learn about the world and this creepy world that you're in, you kind of want to stay there and study it a bit more as well. And the way there's some really wonderfully handled scenes. Like there's that scene at the beginning of episode two, where she is staring up at the ceiling, and I think she's recounting songs with the word blue in it. And at the same time, you gradually realise that while she's doing this, that she's you know, having sex with the commander. While Yvonne Strahovski sits behind her head, and she's just off in this other world. And it's like there's a darkly comic element to that.
There is. It's really exploring
that concept.
Yeah, that runs through the whole series. There are points where you see the filmmakers, and especially Elizabeth Moss, just kind of glancing at you and saying, you realize this is completely ridiculous, right?
Yeah, and it's what we were talking about Wayward Pines lacking last week, because if it didn't have those moments, it would be so relentless that I think it would sort of topple over. Mm-hmm. But those little glimpses into the previous world and her relationship with I don't know the name of the actress, the one from Orange is the New Black. They polarize it, and they give you that contrast that throws everything into even greater relief. Mm-hmm. And those little moments where she's with Ofglen as well, and they suddenly realize that they can talk to each other. It just, I think it's brilliant for that.
Yeah, I agree with everything that has just been said, but I still think that there's just this interesting thing that is quite a new thing to us in entertainment, which is like in terms of humans, in terms of our entertainment. If you pick up a book, you know how heavy the book is and you know how long it is. If you go to the theatre, you know you'll be in bed by midnight. If you know, every form of storytelling where we make a contract with somebody and we pay our money and we are entertained by a morality tale in its oldest form, we know what to expect just in terms of, we're going to invest in this particular mood in order to be entertained or learn something or whatever for this amount of time. I just think it's a fascinating new thing with these very long form stuff which couldn't have existed before, things like The Wire and TV series where you don't know how much of your effort this is going to require. And I just wonder,
I think you kind of do though.
How do you know?
I think
you
can't
tell me how many series are left of this.
No, but I think we're starting to develop a form for it, and actors are contracted for 7 series when they start things like these.
Yeah.
So you're basically looking at anywhere between... Oh, really? I thought it was 7.
No, they contract for 6, which is why there's always the, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth as they negotiate for season 7, because now they want, you know, the giant raises and bigger cuts
and
syndication.
I think it can be both, because I know someone who was contracted for 7, but it doesn't. Pernickety doesn't matter. So you're looking at between 60 and 100 hours of stuff, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And obviously, you know, dependent on it getting those extra seasons. So I think we are starting to, this new form is starting to develop its own rule set. And there's not much that goes beyond that.
But when you take a novel that's already existing, what I'm saying is that if that is our, you're kind of talking about an internal rhythm.
I know what you mean. You could look at the last page and go, okay, so it's 500 pages.
In some cases, stories, so if that's our internal rhythm we've got used to, which is what you're saying, we're sort of getting used to the idea that this may be 6. We're sort of used to that, 6 or 7 series. Some stories, though, in the case of books, were supposed to be short stories, or they were a set length. You know, it's not like The Walking Dead, which runs and runs because it's still being written, although the same with Game of Thrones, you know, it's still being written, so it feels differently. In this case, you're kind of aware of somebody else is in charge of the pace, not necessarily mm-hmm. the original writer is in charge of the pace.
I think at this point, after we've had a season and we can see, you can kind of track where they are in the novel and you can kind of see what their pace is, I'm going to guess we've got two more series after this maximum.
Right, okay.
Now, just to move on. Oh, go on, Jamie.
Can I ask one more thing about pace? Like, I think that the important thing with pace is that, like, yeah, you can go at a slow pace if the world and if the environment that you're in, like, you don't have to develop the plot. Like, my problem with The Walking Dead is that The Walking Dead, as far as the pace goes, where it can go incredibly slow and it can stay too long in one place and it can lose your interest. Whereas, like, at the moment, at the very least, with Handmaid's Tale, I'm interested enough. I like the fact that it's going slow because it's allowing us to see the world properly. Now, that might not work season two. That pace might have to change. The plot might have to move a bit quicker because you're already very much established within that world. I don't know. But at the moment, the pace really fits beginning the journey, you know.
I agree, yeah. And yeah. I think the pacing of shows like this is becoming, like, if you say that the budget, the talent, the writing is a given, then the X factor in what makes a good and great show, I think, is that ability to pace it out. Because I think something like The Walking Dead, as you're saying, because I'm going through that again at the moment. Not again, for the first time, actually. And like you say, Jamie, there are expanses of episodes where you can start to feel a bit left behind. And then they'll throw in one where it's just like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Homeland definitely suffers from it. I don't know if you feel this as well, but it's like, you know, you've got half the series in the first 10 episodes and then the other half in the last two episodes.
It's not, left behind, it's the opposite, isn't it? It's like you're dragging the cart sometimes. You're going, come on.
Sorry, yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
You're leaving
and
it behind.
I agree with Handmaid's Tale, that the comment about the pace being so slow, that's not a criticism in this case because, like I said, The TV show is so much richer than the book because we're taking the opportunity to explore some of the characters that the book is told from June's perspective. She's our protagonist, and she is in the series too. But we have a more slightly more omnipotent narrator in the TV show than we do in the book.
I wonder which Matt or Jamie is heavy breathing so loudly. I think it's Jamie.
Sorry, I think it's me, actually.
Okay, all right.
I do want to apologize, though. Last week, though, it was me. My breathing was heinous last week. I was all over the shop.
Mel, I agree with you. I just have this feeling like, unless it's like a novel, which often takes a long time to get, you know, with novels, often her first 100 pages take a long time to create the universe. I just sort of have this feeling that the writer moved us on quicker. He can still be rich, but moved us on a little quicker in the book, perhaps. Do you know, by episode five whether we are the same sort of distance through the book? Like, how quickly do we get to, for example, the birth Jamie's talking about? How many pages, chapters in does that happen?
That is still fairly early in the book. Maybe not quite, like, that's happening. Well, that's most of episode two, isn't it? All of the... The trip to the, oh my gosh,
don't give away anything. Yeah.
It's almost a commentary, even though this was written decades ago, it's almost a commentary on some of what you see now, you know, with Instagram and these, you know, the push parties and all of that. It's just,
it
made me laugh because there's when Margaret Atwood wrote that, it was such a ridiculous notion, and it is still ridiculous, but it's happening. I mean, it's not beyond the realm.
I was going to say before.
So, is the tone of the
when you said about Mel, the you know, it's so ridiculous. It's like, actually, in terms of all the subjugation of women stuff in this story, it is happening. Like, watch a documentary about women in Saudi Arabia, for example, and or female circumcision. There are loads of almost everything that happens in this book really is happening today.
Yeah.
In now, a society, yeah, that, there are that women that she, feel like this. It's dreadful.
She drew on things that were actually happening for that part of it. I'm just talking about this, you know, the mother who is giving birth.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm totally doing air quotes here.
Yeah.
While the handmaid is actually giving birth, you know, that whole thing. And
so to move on to that
so
subject,
ridiculous,
though.
But it's so completely, I could absolutely see somebody doing that today.
Totally.
Real. Unironically.
Totally. And this is where I just want to go for a moment is like, isn't it, has anyone else watched it and actually done that? It was Sarah who turned to me and went, this is happening, you know, all this shit is happening today in different countries. It might not all be in the same country, but the relevance in terms of the female stuff is really quite disturbing once you go, oh, this is not fake, you know, all of this has happened or is happening.
What? I think that for us watching it, the thing that's most frightening and brilliantly done, I think, is the sort of slow burn of the political change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that rings true, doesn't it? Yeah.
That kind of insidious and like that the attitude of the people being, well, they couldn't ever do that, you mm-hmm. know, and. Mm-hmm. My wife has a tendency to get a bit more worried about what's going on with the elections in the States and here and in Europe than I do. Like she worries about the bigger things happening than further budget cuts and funding cuts, that kind of thing. She's worrying about the future and war and stuff like that. Mm. And you always kind of think to yourself, surely there's no one out there who's going to start a nuclear war or allow a totalitarian Nazi government to take over your country or your region. Mm-hmm. But then you watch this and you suddenly go, fuck, hang on, this could sort of happen slowly mm-hmm. and without us realizing it. And then suddenly there's guys with guns in the street.
Yeah.
And the peaceful protest where you don't believe anyone, you know, your government is not... is accountable enough that they won't allow troops to open fire on their own citizens. And but then it, what happens if they do? What yeah. happens if someone does just start shooting into the crowd? What's going to happen? Everyone's going to get fucking massacred.
And they do, you know. It's
yeah.
not, it's mm-hmm. not in America or Britain, but they do. All of the things you've just described have happened in the last 5 or 10 years, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Anyway, that took us... somewhere around.
It's there's been as I'm sure you've seen there have been several think pieces written about The Handmaid's Tale.
No, I don't
and
read.
How that compares.
No, I haven't.
No, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just talking about what you just said, that this is being presented, you know, when it was written, it was being presented as a dystopian future, and now it feels so close to being real.
Yeah.
That, you know, and talking about that, and it comes up in all of the interviews with the cast as they're making the media rounds. And so it's definitely part of the discussion. And I wonder if that isn't where some of the power of the medium comes in, that this is, I mean, this is a classic novel, but I think I'm the only one of my friends who's read it.
Yeah.
But all of my friends are watching the TV show.
How old is the
say,
novel?
It's 1985, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
85, really? Okay, yeah. Gosh.
So I'm just thinking about how this TV show has the power to kind of expose, you know, when they created it and were filming it last year, they did not think that it would be quite as relevant as it is.
Yeah.
They thought the election would go differently, but I think it's really incredible that we have this very well-told story that is unspooling right in front of us as we're going through,
of course,
similar, not nearly as drastic, but similar.
I mean, Sarah's times. Just finished, while I read my book, Sarah read 1984 and said the exact same thing at the end. And I do wonder, I mean, the one thing I'd say about that before we all worry about the Nazis taking over is that the probably the popularity of these books were because at any given point in time we've had these same concerns about the government taking mm-hmm. over. And certainly in 1985 there was some pretty nasty government action going on around the world, so mm-hmm. hopefully.
And that's actually where I was going with that, is that I feel a little more hopeful,
right,
yeah. for having known, for seeing that, you know what, this was written 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's the way of looking at it. She's it's not come true yet, Margaret.
Well, that, but also that it was written in a time when she was feeling a little unrest about these topics, right? And so this is what her imagination came up with, this dystopian future. Mm. But so she's been there before and we're fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, that's not to say we should be complacent, but no. just to say, okay, you know what? We can fight back against this. We will be okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So, Mel, Matt said it's the greatest modern box set that we've reviewed. Jamie, what would your encouragement be for anyone who's not even started The Handmaid's Tale?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I think it's the greatest. I mean, it's too early for me to sort of feel anything particularly.
It's all right. I was going to add a caveat to that.
Yeah, it's all right. It's too late. Carry on, Jamie.
Go on. I want to hear his caveat.
Go on. Give us your caveat.
Well, I think it's like, in terms of quality, it's incredibly strong. But I almost didn't want to watch anymore after episode two.
It is bleak.
It is so bleak.
I'd watch Better Call. Better Call Saul's pretty bleak. I'd watch that any day over this.
I see the world away from that, but and I think it's a lot better as well.
Ooh.
But
hold on, did you just say this is better than Better Call Saul?
I prefer it.
Oh,
okay. I think it's a better show. Yeah,
we're now going to.
Have you watched all of it, Matt?
What, The Handmaid's Tale?
Uh huh.
I've only seen what's available in the UK. I've seen 3 episodes, I think. Okay. Maybe 4.
Okay, we're now going to play a game which we've never played before. It's called 10 Seconds Each. Matt and Jamie are going to go head-to-head on what is better, Handmaid's Tale or Better Call Saul. When I say your name, you speak. If you hear someone else's name, stop talking. Here we go. Matthew.
I think it's what we were talking about last week with Wayward Pines, where The Handmaid's Tale is creating Jamie. Something entirely... You fucking prick.
I said 10 seconds. That's Jamie's up. Matt, you can carry on.
What?
It's back to you.
No, I don't want to play your
it's
stupid game.
It's 10 seconds each. Mel, right,
I won't
stop.
Be,
stop
I won't be controlled by you, Howell.
Stop the clock. Mel, did I not say 10 seconds each?
You're not dragging me in on this.
Oh, jeez. Right. All right, I'll give you 20 seconds each, starting with Jamie. Go.
It's very, very simple. Better Call Saul is written by Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, who are simply the best storytellers on television at the moment. And that is a fact.
Okay, we've just got 6 seconds of Jamie's time
left.
There you
go, 6 to spare. You can have them on me, Matt.
And Matt?
Better Call Saul is just using little narrative hooks to drag you on through. And there's a lot of over-embellished long shots. Handmaid's Tale is creating a new world.
Jamie.
Ooh, shots fired.
Handmaid's Tale is an excellent start to creating a world, but Better Call Saul is a fully realized, beautifully choreographed and well-crafted piece of televisual art. There is nothing in Better Call Saul that is wasteful.
Matt.
There are only 2 really good performances in Better Call Saul. And ultimately, they are becoming self-indulgent with the way they shoot them.
Oh, my word.
6 that seconds is... left before Jamie gets to retort to that. Think carefully, Jamie. Jamie.
Come on. The way they tell stories in Better Call Saul, I watch a lot of TV. Nobody out there is tell stories so beautifully as Better Call Saul, as the writers of Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad do. The way they tell a story, they don't even use a linear way of telling stories a lot of the time.
Matt.
They use these.
Better Call Saul has shown itself to have one trick, which is to show you something incongruous which you don't understand, and then slowly eke out the explanation of it throughout the rest of the episode so it becomes clear. All it is a cape over something, and they slowly reveal it.
Jamie.
No, it's not at all. It's like they're making this beautifully crafted little toy, and they wind it up for you, and then they let you see this beautiful toy play out as it kind of bumbles along the floor, and it's just a wonderful. They're just so well thought through. They just care Matt. About making something.
If I have to watch another long sequence of Mike walking around doing something without saying anything, without them telling me what he's doing, and then eventually you go, "Oh, that's what he's doing," I'm going to blow off my own cock.
I'd like to take these 5 seconds to say, Jamie, please answer the question about long, prolonged sequences, Jamie.
It's more than just that. It's more than just long, prolonged sequences. These sequences are not the sole purpose of Better Call Saul. They are a lovely device that they use, but it's the beautiful characters. It's the fact that Jimmy McGill, this character, is a wonderfully realised individual.
20-second break for Mel and I. Mel, don't you think it's interesting that Jamie has not attacked Handmaid's Tale at all? He's completely on the back foot here.
I do. He's very much on the defense, and I find it interesting that Matt appears to be winning after watching 3 episodes of his show, and Jamie has seen how many seasons of...
That's 20. Matt.
3.
How long did we really need to see Mike taking apart that car?
No.
How I'd long argue. Did we really need to see him searching for that bug? Surely we could have seen the car laid out in all its pieces and then revealed the bug, and that would have been it.
And it's back to details. You, Jamie, but you're forfeited 5 seconds for interrupting, Matthew. You've got 15
it's
seconds
though,
from now.
It's those details that make it the standard. And the reason I'm sticking on Better Call Saul, not attacking Handmaid's Tale, is because I want to talk about Better Call Saul. It's because it's the one show that I want to shout from the rooftops and say, this is the best TV there
Matt.
Is out there.
Handmaid's Tale is current. It's relevant. It's thought-provoking. The performances are uniformly excellent. And the world is phenomenally crafted and remarkably prescient.
That sounds like a conclusion, Jamie.
Fantastic.
You've got 20 seconds to make your own conclusion. Go.
It's a misery fest. It's a slog through a swamp of absolute miserable...
The gloves are off.
...depressing a trudgery through horribleness after horribleness of these poor women have put through absolute shite. It's a horrible situation from the start to the finish. I don't want to put myself through a torturous
Thank
experience.
You, Jamie.
Of what,
okay, take a breath, right. Jamie. Take a breath.
Congratulations, both of you.
That's very good. That's very good.
Let's go over to the judge now, Mel, to tell us what happened.
Oh, well.
In this competition?
That's correct.
I'm going to have to go with Matt here.
Of course you are. You love Handmaid's Tale.
Well, I'm not going to call, but I have to say, after Jamie's moral defense of it, I really have no desire to watch it.
Oh. Matt managed to put his finger on everything that annoyed me about Better Call Saul, and yet I would still rather watch it over Handmaid's Tale because it makes me so sad, Handmaid's Tale. And there are times
Keep
when
going,
I want
guys.
Yeah, there's well, in no, both cases, I want them to get going. You know, in both cases, I want them to crack on. At least Better Call Saul has got a bit more humor to it, I suppose. But
you know, you'll feel like you there's payoff. You'll feel like your time was well invested. Once you get to the end.
I mean, yeah, I'm up for it. I'm going to stick with Handmaid's Tale. I do like it.
Hey, I like Better Call Saul as well. I just, you know, I was playing to win.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing, I was, you know.
Matt, are you available for trivia nights by any chance?
Okay, good. If you would like to suggest a battle off for next week, I think we'll stick with this. studio@theboxsetpod.com. I think we can really get down to the nub of things a little bit quicker, can't we? We could just have 3.5-minute podcasts from now on, just like that.
That was fun.
That was good fun. Have we missed anything about Handmaid's Tale that anybody wants to raise a hand and say? Oh, go on, Mel. Go.
But you guys haven't watched it all.
Oh, okay. Well, we can't.
So there's so much. We need to do a spoiler podcast for this one once you all have seen.
Let's do it.
The
yeah, let's season. Do it.
Okay. You know, I have so much.
I have one more thing to say, which I don't think I've seen anything except for maybe Mulholland Drive, which has this ability to make you feel dread. Mm-hmm. Like, I am worried every single minute of that show that someone is going to get caught doing something, someone's going to burst in and do something. It's just like, it's so tense.
Exactly.
It's an absolute masterclass in doing it.
Yes, because you're supposed to feel that, because that's what the characters feel.
Well, here's exactly. My problem with what I was trying to get to earlier about the novelistic pace of it not going quickly enough, is that I am on the precipice between that feeling, Matt, and actually thinking, I know for a fact that everybody's going to have a shit deal here. Everyone's going to get caught. Everyone's going to get tortured. It's all going to end badly. You know, total.
Yeah. I don't feel hopeful. I feel hopeful.
Not very. No, maybe 3% hopeful.
Howell, wait until you see what Yvonne's doing as you.
Yes. Oh. Well, I have noticed. That's what
that's
I think.
That's why
she's
you're watching it.
So good at
it's. This. I mean, I'm using whatever weapon I have to say.
Well,
stick with it because.
Howell's just holding out for that moment where she's going to change into a schoolgirl outfit in the back of a van.
No, that's not going to happen.
But even in episode one, the way she plays it, you're saying a lot. Right from episode one, what she shows on her face, these glimmers of something else, and I don't know what that something else is yet.
But you find out.
Because she's still insane, but there are glimmers of something else going on, and that is the intriguing thing for me. Yeah, and Sarah said that she felt that Yvonne Strahovski's playing her more sympathetically than the character is in the book.
A little bit, yeah.
Sarah also said that they've done something else with this than the book. Is that correct?
You have to keep in mind that the book is from June's perspective.
Can we please stop straying into spoiler territory?
So who's June?
It's
Elizabeth Moss, you dullard.
Yeah, I got that. I'd say so this is from her perspective.
Offred is June. June's her real name, Offred. And remember that in the book, we're seeing Serena Joy from her perspective.
Okay.
So it is going to be a little harsher.
So
what Yvonne Strahovski's doing is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I knew Matt would like this because it's so pretentious that you can barely sink your teeth through it. It's so dense.
In what way is it pretentious?
Exactly. I do not care for pretentious.
I think you've just plucked that word out of thin air.
This is amazing.
It is amazing.
This is world building.
Well, the performances is amazing. Everything is amazing, but the pace is pretentious.
There's nothing pretentious about it. It's a delicate unpicking of a detailed world.
I think you are
wrong.
I'll
give you pretentious when you talk about Transparent or something like that. Yes, that's pretentious. This isn't pretentious.
Well,
so don't just start coming up with
criticisms
just to put some fake sense of drama into your silly little show.
I enjoyed that voice. The pretension, I think that's why we ended up comparing it with Better Call Saul, though, because your criticisms of watching Mike strip apart a car for an hour is, I agree with completely, and in the same way, the way I rate pretentiousness is the idea of, like, if you were to screen this at the local Labour Club, how long would people give it? You know, how much are you really keeping people's attention in terms of pace? So in terms of pace, I think both of those shows can rest on saying, look at how rich we are and how mysterious we are.
No, this show is showing you stuff that you don't know. In Better Call Saul, all it's doing is drawing you out. It's teasing you. Whereas this is like, look at this. This is what happens here now. Look at this. This is how they're treated.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right.
This
is the world that we're in.
Yeah, I take it back. I made all that stuff up about Matt finding it pretentious. I just wanted to wind him up. But I do now agree that Better Call Saul is a bag of shit.
You know what? I can't believe what the hell happened here.
I think you need to rename the podcast.
This is an absolute joke. This is the best show on TV.
Welcome to the new podcast.
It's getting slammed up.
Antagonism with Howell Evans.
I don't know what happened here.
I think that Better Call Saul is great. Just, you know, it's a bit like some of those episodes of Game of Thrones in like season 4 or 5, whatever it was, where you just go, I understand. No, when Matt said that, I mean, that is it. I don't want to criticise Better Call Saul because I still think Vince Gilligan is a phenomenal writer. But the number of times I've sat there and inside my mind, sometimes out of my mouth, I've said, we get it now.
I don't understand. I love that. I relish when he's taking that car apart. I bloody love it. I love the character of Mike, who I didn't really care about in Breaking Bad. In Better Call Saul, he fascinates me. His meticulousness, the guy's meticulous ingenuity. I love watching this guy.
I couldn't even remember why he was taking the car apart, which made it even fucking worse.
I had to explain it to you.
He took about 10 texts from you. I only stopped texting you. I pretended I knew what you were on about. I still didn't get it. I just thought, this is just going to annoy him spending all the evening trying to explain it to me. They have lost my attention in too many of these long scenes now. And I'm not even on my phone. I'm watching the thing. I'm trying my bloody best here.
Well, you know what? We're sorry, Howell, if Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould can't wait around for every dullard in the class to catch up with the plot points, all right?
Is anyone else surprised that we can hear Jamie from that far inside Vince Gilligan's arse?
You have no idea. Don't even touch that man's arse. That man is an absolute storytelling genius, and he'll go down in the archives. That's certainly true. Oh, he's an amazing man.
Thank you.
Both of those shows, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, are B-tier shows.
Oh, you are so wrong.
They are.
You're just trying to give me a gut punch now. You don't mean this, do you, Matt?
No, I do mean that. Those are in my B tier.
Matt is now going to go away and listen to Radio 3 whilst drinking an expensive vintage wine.
And yet I don't do that.
Well, you should, based on that argument. You can't.
I would like it if I did that, but I can't listen to Radio 3 because I'm not clever.
I started this podcast talking about the stink in Matt's house, somehow it has now turned into he is incredibly pretentious.
I think the stank in your basement's gone to your head. You need to crack a window, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Box Set Pod. If you'd like to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. I think you can tell from this is one of those where someone is now going to send us an email saying, I really enjoyed that podcast about Handmaid's Tale, but bloody hell, I'm not sure if I want to take this on in my life. I wouldn't dissuade you from that. It's hard work, but it's like reading a great novel because it is a great novel.
Anyone going in there, first episode, just get through the first episode. It's a heavy going first one, but after you do, it's rewarding to enter that world, and it's fascinating. It's definitely worth it. It's not just really heavy. It is really fascinating as well and gripping.
And if you want to become an activist, if you think that this situation is entirely fictional and made up, if ever you want to become an activist for any of the women's issues that occur in this, because there are women in the world who could do with your help. This is true. Thank you. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Love your emails. Always love them. And next week, I don't even know what we're doing next week. We're going to have to decide.
The Keepers.
Oh, holy shit on a bike. The Keepers next week. Oh my effing Lord above, you are going to be blown away. Please watch episode 1 of The Keepers. I suggest you watch it the day before you actually listen to this podcast normally, because you will struggle not to continue after episode 1. See you then for that. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mel in Kansas.
Thank you, Howell in England.
Thank you, Matthew in London. It's risen from the plague. It's risen from the blitz. And now it's risen from the stank of Matthew's pretentious North London abode.
Thank you, Howell.
And Jamie, thank you for joining us from Croston.
I thought it was Eccleston.
Eccleston.
Yes, Eccleston.
They're very close, Mel. No one can tell. Not even anyone.
They're not
there.
Actually that close.
Problem is, no one can read who lives there, so they can't tell what the sign is on their village, so it's fine.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a 20-minute walk.
Howell's getting hate mail. You know he is.